This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now, did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. All right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go.
Today's episode of If These Ovaries Could Talk is brought to you by Care Of, and we are very, very excited to have them on board.
We are.
Jimmy's got a little flu cold.
It's not a flu.
Oh, your son has the flu.
My son has a flu, so I am going on a week of no sleep. So this is what happens. And I have a cough.
Oh my God, welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk. That is the state of Jamie and Robin today.
We are hardcore parenting. It's my new saying.
Hardcore parenting? What does that mean, actually?
It just means I'm in it. I'm up.
It basically means things are shitty.
Yes. Yeah, things are shitty and I get no sleep. But you want to hear something on the bright side?
No sleep from Brooklyn. What?
On the bright side, yeah. We're getting merchandise.
Yes. I was like, what's the bright side? I got so excited.
We are. We're going to have like little onesies.
Well, I mean, like,
that's my vision.
I know I want onesies.
Yeah, totes.
We haven't. Okay. So we should manage expectations. We're not done yet, but Mary's at home right now trying to set things up.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mary.
Thanks, Mary.
And then we want you guys to email us if you have any ideas of what you want us to make.
Yeah. Which, I mean, obviously.
I would say onesies.
Onesies. We have some shirts. You know, you want a hat?
You want a hat?
Let us know. You want like a hat with an ovary on it?
Yeah, oh my God. Just one ovary.
Not two.
So you can email us at ovariestalk@gmail.com with your ideas because we'd like to hear them.
Yeah, totally. Please do.
So guess what, Jamie? This Sunday is the 31st of March is International Transgender Day of Visibility.
Yes. It's a day.
Isn't that exciting?
I know it is. It really is. And it's a day that's dedicated to celebrating transgender people and raising awareness of the discrimination faced by transgender people worldwide.
I mean, that seems like a great idea for a day. I love it.
It is. This was spearheaded by this US-based youth advocacy organization called the Trans Student Educational resources. I wanted to say that right.
It was so hard for you to say.
I wanted to say it right. I didn't want to mess it up. It's a lot of syllables in there. Syllables. It was spearheaded by them because there is a day of remembrance, a trans visibility day of remembrance, which is
November, right?
November 20th. Mm-hmm. I know that because that's my son's birthday. Mm-hmm. But it really just mourned the deaths of transgender people. And so they created this day to celebrate the lives of transgender people worldwide.
Well, I love that. And in honor of said day, we have Teek Milan on today. He's a writer, a public speaker, an advocate. And he also happens to be a model.
I mean, he's gorgeous.
The handsome devil.
He really is. And he's my new guru.
Let's get him in here.
Yeah, let's do it. Hi.
Hello. Oh my God.
I wish that was a video that you could have seen the scared face of Teek's face. You're, by the way, not alone. We scare almost everyone.
We're scary ladies.
We're a lot.
You two are great.
I'm so, welcome. So glad welcome. We were able Thank to get this me. Together. I feel like I was borderline stalking you for
stalked
season
you for about
two.
A year.
And then I was like, there came a point where I was like, I should probably give him a break because I think I'm really coming at him too hard. And I was like, what I'll do is I'll go quiet and then I'll come back for season three.
You did. You ghosted me for a minute.
I did for a minute. Like I was a little hard to get.
Then you slipped into my DMs again like, hey there.
Tell us, give us the elevator pitch a little bit about you because you have like a pretty significant career.
Okay, so I'm Teek Milan. I'm transgender guy. So my career started off, when I first started off my career, I started off doing hip hop journalism, right?
Oh, really?
So I've been doing hip hop journalism. You know, I interviewed everybody from like Jay-Z to Lil Wayne, all kinds of folks. It's been amazing. Going to all kinds of events and things. But what was happening, now this was before I had transitioned. Oh. I was just really butch. I was like, okay. I was really, really butch.
And how did that go over in the hip hop community?
That's the thing. I will walk into, let me tell you a story. I'll never forget, I was going to interview Beyonce's dad, right?
Yeah.
Oh.
And I went into a recording studio and whoever, I guess he had some people with him, and the woman who was at the reception desk was like, oh, you know, Teek is here to see you. And you know, so if the phone is loud, you can hear the other person.
Oh no.
So the guy says, is she cute? And she said, ha, you'll see.
Oh.
Not knowing that I could hear her. So I walked into the room and there's all these people. And then, you know, I kind of had a funny looks and people kind of like do a double take. And what would happen is I would go into these events and people would hear me and then they would hear my voice and then they would she me and they would overcompensate and be like, oh, baby girl, oh, Miss Lady, oh, sweetie. Just like overemphasizing this very feminine language because my gender was making them uncomfortable, which is making me feel really like invisible like invalid. Like it was a really shitty experience, you know? And then at that time, I was really feeling like this really deep incongruence in my gender. And I wasn't sure what that was. I didn't know if I was trans.
So you didn't know from...
I didn't know from like birth. You know what I'm saying? So
and
that
how,
happened.
And this, you were how old?
I was probably like 20, 20, 21. It was my early 20s. I didn't start my transition until I was 25. And those places are really, really, really gendered. And it's not just like hip hop specifically, but it's just...
Very.
It's entertainment. The music industry is so gendered.
Yeah.
And it was like pushing
very
me...
Very male in general.
And it was pushing me and pulling me in ways that just didn't feel good, right? Uh-huh. So I was like, boom, I'm done with this. So I switched to doing more like advocacy work. And I was bartending at this lesbian bar called Crazy Nannies. I don't know if you remember.
Crazy
do you remember
Nannies?
Nannies?
Was my joint. Little Crazy dancing Nannies up on the second floor.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah. Working there at Crazy Nannies when I first got to New York really gave me like my entrance into community, right? Yeah. So I was in community doing that. So I was like, you know what I need to do? I need to find a job in community so I can work and transition in a way that feels good. And I don't got to hide anything. I ain't got to do a bunch of bullshit. So that's what I did. So what I did, I took a step back from doing hip-hop journalism and I started working in community. So I was doing that. And then somebody was like, yo, MTV is looking for journalists for a new reality show that they have with Rolling Stone magazine. And she was like, you really, really, really need to do this. Long story short, they put me on the show.
Wow.
So I did a reality show on MTV in 2006. I'm from Rolling Stone. They put on the worst time slot. Came on like 10 p.m. on Sundays. Nobody watched shit. Whatever. But I was on a reality show.
You were on a reality show.
I was on a reality show. And that's what really, like, I think really helped. Like, really put
Had you
me...
transitioned at this point?
No, and that's the thing. I was still super butch. I was like the first, like, black butch lesbian to be, like, on TV.
Which is crazy. 2006.
Which is crazy. It's crazy. 2006. I was the first one. And I remember the producer... really trying to push me to come out as trans
Shut
on
up.
camera, because I had confided into some of my castmates that that's how I was feeling, and of course cameras were there. You know, he was like, "I really want you to kind of talk about this."
Of course, they
and
do.
Tried to, like, my last exit interview. He tried to sneak it in. Like, he asked me, like, "Are you transgender?" I'm like, "Man, you can't. My mama don't know, man. I can't be coming out on MTV." No. You know what I'm saying? So I did that, and then after that, I ended up working with Lambda Legal, and then I worked in the Bronx Community Pride Center doing some stuff. And all the while I was doing this work in community, I started back freelancing, and freelancing to the so where I didn't have to go out to events, people didn't have to see me. You know, they really couldn't, like, my voice was getting, I would deepen my voice as pre-T, so people didn't know what my gender was over the phone, and I could just do my thing. No one ever saw me, and that's right. What I did. I was just freelancing online. So like, this is kind of like incognito. So it was like my media work.
You got an incubation time.
Yeah.
Period.
It was great. Like, I really was really intentional about trying to make my transition as easy as possible. Mm-hmm. So those two worlds kind of came together, my media work and my advocacy work. So then we fast forward, and my agent was a coach, was a TED coach.
Oh.
And they were like, "You and your wife have an amazing story." Yeah. And, you know, TED Women's 2016, we're doing something different. We're doing duets. Why don't you and your wife do a TED Talk duet, and we will coach you through it?
Amazing. Wow.
And that's how I ended up doing my TED Talk, which has been seen by over 3 million people.
Yes.
Check out TED.com. A queer vision of love and marriage. That. And so now, you know, I'm a public speaker.
Talk about, like, you went from an incubation period by yourself to out to 3 million people. Like, that is a very public.
Yeah, it's very public. But see, by that time, like 2016, I had already been out. Like,
yeah,
I came out to my family, I came out to friends. Everybody understood me as Teak. Everybody, you know, it's been, now it's been so many years. I started T in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
So what's that?
It's been a
12
while.
Years.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't even remember. I was talking to my aunt, and we're talking about, my daughter, and she asked me, she's like, "So are you going to use your sperm?" And I was like, Auntie.
Was that
Auntie.
The most amazing compliment ever?
It really was. She's like, "Sadiko, you going to use your sperm?"
Oh my God.
Auntie. She was like, "Oh, wait.
That's amazing."
Yeah.
I kind of think that's the cutest thing ever.
Yeah. She didn't get it.
I love them.
No problem.
Wow.
Even my grandmother. My grandmother's 93 years old.
I love your grandmother. Stop. Really?
She's 93. My dear. I mean, obviously, there was some difficult moments, but no one was ever, like, bad to me. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. So now I'm here and married. Got a baby.
So, hold on. So let's hear the elevator pitch about your family.
Oh, yeah.
So I always wanted kids. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I always wanted kids, but there was a point in my life where I was like, I want kids. This was before I started my transition. Before I even knew that I was trans, I was like, I know I want to have children, but I don't want to be a mother. And I didn't understand then that I was trans, so I had put it in the back of my mind. So then I transitioned. And when I met my wife, we were talking, and she wanted to have kids, and I wanted to have kids. So I was like, great. I finally met someone who wants to have children, and we're kind of in the same place.
Had you already transitioned when you met your wife?
Yeah, I already transitioned. Matter of fact, she didn't even want to talk to me at first, because when I hit her, me and my wife met on Facebook. And when I first slid in her DMs, she thought I was a cis guy. And she was like, "No, I don't like you.
Of you."
She's like, "Do you not see my profile there?"
Yeah, she's like, "I like lesbians and like trans men. What are you doing?" And I'm like, "Hey, guess what?" Yeah, so
amazing.
We wanted kids, and it was really hard at first trying to figure out how to do that. But we figured it out, found a donor, boom, boom, bang, and now we have a baby.
Anonymous open donor? Did you use a?
It's a donor that we know.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Somebody that we know, and we were like, "Hey, we're a queer couple. This is what we want to do." He was cool. His mom is a lesbian, and he was like really responsive and respectful. He was like, "Yeah, I'll shoot this in a cup for you. Great." Like, thanks,
dude.
And
you used her egg. It was her egg.
It's like an IUI.
Yeah. I wasn't using anything for me. My girlfriend prior to my wife, she and I had talked about having a family too, but she wanted to carry my baby. Mm-hmm. Like, wanted my eggs come. And I don't get a period. I've been on teeth since 2007. I don't even know what that looks like.
Uh-huh.
And the way my dysphoria is set up, I had a lot of gender dysphoria around that. Around getting a period, like, bodies and stuff, like, you know, it's like, oh, I'm cool with the parts, even though I got my top surgery, but that one thing I couldn't do. And in order for her to carry my baby, I would have to get off of my T that come back.
That was.
Can you imagine what you'd have to go through for that?
I couldn't do it. And she was really putting a lot of pressure on me, and my mother was being, was really mad at her. Like, how was she asking to do something like that?
That's a lot to ask of you.
Good for your mom.
Yeah, my mother didn't play that. And so then when Kim and I met, she understood that wasn't happening. She was like, "I would never ask you to do that."
Oh, it's really a lot to ask.
Yeah, she was like, "I would never, ever, ever." So we found a donor who worked for us, and we have our little girl now.
So it was an easy process.
Yeah. Did you do legal paperwork? Always my question. I always get very nervous because
you have a known donor.
Yeah, because a friend of mine, a trans guy, Chase Strangio, shout out to Chase. He's a lawyer at the ACLU. Uh-huh. He had a known donor as well. So he just gave me the contract that he used for them.
Gay drafting.
Yeah,
drafting.
And he was just like, you know, just switch it up. So I did that, got it notarized, boom. And we did it, and it took a few months, and then we got pregnant. Now, prior to that, we had tried before with anonymous donor, and we had a miscarriage. That was really hard in 2015. And then, see, 2017 is when we found the new donor guy. And yeah, it only took about 3 months.
Nice.
Just like three.
Very
like,
lucky.
Yeah, yeah.
Is he in the kids' lives in any way?
Not at all. Not at all. That was his whole thing.
That's great.
I don't need to be. I just want to do this.
Yeah, because he already had a kid and like he had a relationship and he was just like, he's like, you know, my mom's queer. I totally get this. Here you go.
Was there any other reasoning for picking? Like, did he resemble one of you? Or, you know, like when we pick our donor, like we picked our donors that look kind of like us.
Yeah. He looks like my wife. Because like we wanted somebody, because it was like, we can't find anybody that looked like me. We want to find somebody that looked like her. Mm-hmm. And not for nothing, like us trying to find anonymous donors, like from like donor registries is so hard. There's just not a lot of black donors. In Canada, in the entire country of Canada, there are only 24 black donors.
This is, you know what? We talked to some rainbow kids.
Or
queer spawn.
Yeah.
Children of gay moms who are, they're in their 20s now, 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about this, the whole, because of laws in Canada or whatever, it's really hard to get.
It's really, really hard. It's really hard to get. There's a lot of white guys, but there were just hardly any black men at all.
Is the process like, could you have used a bank and shipped into Canada, or was it just?
That's what we're doing so we're working on baby number two.
You are?
Baby number two. So yeah, so we bought a bunch of sperm and a couple of them were black guys and a couple of them weren't. I was like, so like, listen,
you just bought bunches of people, like not just like, you didn't just pick one donor and then buy like 12 vials.
No.
You were just like, we're buying four.
No, because all of them didn't have, because like the one guy, the one black guy that we found, the way they did it, you can't get like 14 vials from one.
Yeah,
this was a sperm bank.
This is a sperm bank,
like an online sperm bank.
Online sperm bank, right? I think we used one. There's one like in Seattle.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we had to find sperm banks that were shipped to Canada,
right?
Because the whole thing is that we want to have our babies in Canada, right? So I had one black guy. We can only get like two from him, and then there were other people. There's one.
Only get two. Wow.
That was like all that was left.
All that was left.
Oh,
that's the thing. It was all that was left, right? So that was there was that, and there was another guy. I think he's like, my wife is Trinidadian, so we found a guy who was like Trini and like Asian, like Chinese, something like that.
And you're like, and then, close enough.
So yeah, I think we got it from three different donors that are three very different looking folks.
So like, you have backups.
We have backups.
You're going with choice number one.
I was going to say, you bought them all and you're like,
choice number one is number 5910.
Ooh, I love it.
It's number 5910.
Yeah.
It's choice number one that we're going to work
with. You're going to go there and then you're going to work down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're banking a group of them and then you're going to work through them. So you just want to have them all on hand.
Yeah, we'll have them all on hand. Yeah, wow. Yeah. Just in case it takes.
We've never heard that before.
This isn't new for us.
Yeah.
This is new.
Yeah.
Everyone that we've talked to has been so just like agonizing.
Like finding Superman.
And you guys are just like, we got these people and like, they'll all be good.
And you're the dad.
Yeah, I'm the dad. Don't matter.
And you don't care.
I don't care. My baby right here. I have a little Asian baby. Guess what? That's my baby. That's my little Asian baby.
That's my little Asian baby right there.
That's my little Asian baby right there. I love her. You know, I don't care. Who cares? It really didn't matter. I mean, as a trans person, I know for me, I had to let go of this idea that my kids are ever going to look like me.
Yeah.
Or ever going to like share my DNA. You know what I'm saying?
Was that hard though? Was that even like it doesn't seem like that was
for me,
difficult
for
me, for you.
It wasn't difficult. For me, it wasn't difficult because those are the things I had to think about when I started my transition.
When you started
I had to think about that. I also had to think about, like, I'm about to come out as a trans person and I may lose everybody in my life that I thought loved me. And I got to be ready for that loss. I have to be ready for the long-term implications of what I'm about to do to myself and to my body.
It's your life comes down to the what is the math term? The lowest common denominator.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you talked about places where you were welcome and not like from a bad point of view, but maybe less welcome at Crazy Nannies after, because now you're a man.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like you have already gone through all this. So this probably at this point is just like, whatever. Yeah, this is a baby.
Yeah. There's a loss. There's just, that's what it is. Like, you have to, like, there's a lot that you gain. There's a lot that you lose. And there's a lot you have to negotiate. And those are the things that I really was really intentional about thinking about, knowing that I was going to lose some community, knowing that I was going to have to grieve like the woman that I was and grieve like the sisterhood and the community that I made. And also understanding that my kids are never going to share my DNA and they probably probably won't look like me, but that doesn't mean they can't be like me.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, one of the most important things I think that I've ever heard was when I came out to my dad as a lesbian when I was 14, right? I only came out to him because his best friend at the time was a lesbian.
Oh.
And she got married, like this time we couldn't get married, but married. And he was
a commitment ceremony.
He was in her wedding.
Oh.
Right? And I knew, and I used to know her from the bars, right? When I was a teenager.
You were like, I know you.
And she came up to me and she was like, your father knows you're a lesbian. And he is so hurt that you don't trust him enough to tell him. Right? So I was like, okay. She's like, you got to tell
your dad. I love your dad so much.
My dad's such a good guy. Shout out to my dad. So I sat him down. I'm like, okay, daddy, I'm gay. And he said to me, he said, listen, my job as your father is not to teach you who to be. I have no control over who you are. It's just to teach you how to be in this world. And I really carry that with me through fatherhood. I don't know who my baby is. They don't have nothing to do with me, but how they are is something they're going to carry with them forever. You know, how to love with their whole heart, how to lead with compassion, with empathy, and to be kind and to be strong. Like, these are things they're going to learn from me. How mm-hmm. they look, that don't mean nothing. Mm-hmm. That means absolutely nothing. You know, so I had to let that go a long time ago.
I'm learning so much from you. I mean, just because I got so hung up on we got so hung up on choosing this donor and knowing that both of us were going to carry and each wanting to look like, you know, like it's and once the kids are here, none of it matters.
By the way, so much of it doesn't matter once the kids are here. Like all the, like when you meet a first time, I mean, like, by the way, I really mean this, no offense to women who are currently pregnant and stressing about it, because it is a really big deal.
Yeah.
But now that I have a 9 and 7 year old, when I'm looking at them going through all this, I'm like, oh honey, like it's how that baby comes out is so irrelevant.
Yeah.
Like you are going to be crying because your kid won't stay in their bed.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, this is just have the baby and like nap.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Like,
put him in the nursery and take a good, like, the rest of it, it's fine.
You'll be fine.
Yeah. That's why no one got hurt. Yeah. It's just this, like, it's all in those moments.
Yeah.
It is critical.
Yeah, it really is.
Like critical.
Really is. Yeah.
But that being said, like when my daughter does something that is not, that I don't like, that is all my wife.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I got on a plane and went to Bogota to try to make my kids be the same donor.
Really?
I went to Bogota.
I know you did.
And like Bogota. Literally had an insemination in Bogota, like with a family who's just all were like, oh, and talking to me in Spanish. And I was like, I don't know what's happening. I have a question for you.
Sure.
We talk a lot about when you start to tell your kids about your non-traditional family.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, in your family, what's your like, do you have a book? Do you have what's your story there?
Okay, so we just got a book. So my daughter just turned one on January 17th, and we had a little party for her.
She was older. It's a little early, but okay, go ahead.
Yeah, right. Sorry. Yeah, only one.
I'm like, she's in the womb. Have you started talking to her yet? I thought she was like 3. I'm sorry.
No, she's just one.
There's wine.
She's still like, you know, bow. So anyway, so a friend of ours gave us a book about a crayon. It's called Red, and it's about a blue crayon that has on a red wrapper, and everybody thinks that the crayon is red because of the red wrapper.
Uh-huh.
And the crayon is like, I'm actually blue. I'm really, really blue. And everybody's like, no, you are the color of roses. You're the color of this. Like, no, I'm the color of the sky. I'm actually blue.
Oh my God, I love this book.
Yeah, so that book we have for my baby. Mm-hmm. And then I want her to see the movie. It's a cartoon movie, and it's about a shark who is a vegetarian. Like at the end, like he's like a light blue and he has a little sash on me. He's like, I'm a vegetarian. You know what I'm saying? So I want her to see that. But for us, our kid is always going to know that gender is a variety.
Yes.
It's not a binary experience. You know, one of my daughter's godmothers. Okay, so two of my daughter's godmothers are butch women,
mm-hmm.
right? And another one of her godparents is a trans woman.
Mm-hmm.
Our doula is a gender nonconforming person. His pronoun is they. And then I'm her dad and I'm trans. So she's going to be brought up around people of different genders.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think there's ever going to be a moment where I have to come out to Soleil. Mm-hmm.
It'll just be her
Soleil
existence.
Soleil.
Her name.
It'll just be part of who she is.
It's part of who she is. Like, oh, yeah, my daddy's a trans guy. And, you know, and my babysitter is gender nonconforming, and this is who they are. You know, like she's just
going to be part
know.
Of her language.
This will be part of her language. Yeah, she's going to be brought up with that truth that gender is a spectrum. And mm-hmm. that she's always going to know that she can be anywhere on that spectrum as she wants. Like right now, like we gender her as she, mm-hmm. you know, because we're her parents and she's one and she can't make any decisions. But when she gets to the point where she wants to make decisions about her gender and how she wants to show up in the world, and do whatever the fuck you want to do.
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying? So I don't ever want to come out to her. My coming out days are done. Yeah. I'm almost 40 years old. I'm done coming out.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. I am.
Yeah, I am. I'm here. So that's it. So that's so that's how we're going to deal with that.
I love that.
Yeah. And my kid is always around a bunch of queers all the time.
I think that's a common thing, that idea of just building the community that you want your kids to see and making sure they have.
But also knowing that they are also out in the society, which is not necessarily the society we have set up in our home.
Right.
Yeah.
And knowing that they are going to be seeing that and hearing things that are not reaffirmed in our household.
Yeah.
And also being prepared to have the conversation with them about, so-and-so, you know, asked you if you have a boyfriend yet when you're five. And we're going to talk about this because you don't have to have a boyfriend, you know, like, and being
because you're five.
Right.
And Kim and I think about that all the time, maybe because we're new parents that we're super, super protective. And we have all these really like grand ideas of.
Yeah. Have that second kid.
Right. You're like,
Go to public school. Yeah, yeah. Babe's got this.
Because we're planning on, we're going to homeschool her, you know, because we can.
You are
because
amazing.
We do the same kind of work. So it's not like, you know, we have control of our time. We're both entrepreneurs. Yeah. And, you know, we take our baby everywhere with us. She travels with us all over the place. So we really want to want her to understand that even though you do learn lessons outside of the home, the greatest lessons that you learn are the ones that you learn, you know, in between these four walls, you know what I mean? And to carry that with you everywhere that you go. But that's what you're saying. That's a large part of the reason why we don't want to put her in school.
Right.
You know, because of that. And also just, you know, Kim and I both were always the only Black girls in our classes. We both in gifted programs. We both went to very, very white schools. And it wasn't always nice. It wasn't always bad either. Like, I've made some amazing friendships with the white girls that I went to school with, like amazing, amazing girls. But I had some really fucked up things happen to me.
Yeah.
And particularly from teachers and administration. It wasn't even like my peers.
Really?
Like, the white girls I went to school with were amazing. It was the teachers that treated me like shit. The administration that treated me like shit, that thought that I wasn't capable of the things that I was achieving because of who I was. Wow. And I don't ever want my daughter to have to deal with those things. Like, I dealt with those things so she doesn't have to. Mm-hmm. You know, so we really want to try to homeschool her and really want to kind of insulate her as much as possible. Like, I don't know if that's a good thing to do or a bad thing to do, but I don't know. We're just going to, at some point, we're going to have to let Soleil take the lead.
What you just did is you just talked about the beginning of parenting. I don't know if that's a good thing. I don't know if it's a bad thing. It's where we're going to start.
Yeah.
And I think the difference between a good parent and a bad parent is that you start somewhere with the awareness that if this sucks, we're going to make a right turn.
Yeah.
But if it, like, and really dialing in to see, like, is this the best thing? And if it's not, like, correct.
Yeah.
If you don't, then like you stink as a parent.
Well, stay open, which I think our lives teach us.
Yeah, yeah. Stay
being
open.
Who we are. Stay open.
Just stay open. And that's what I think what makes us really good parents as like LGBT folks, is like queer and lesbian, gay identified people, is that we're raising our children with an openness that we may not necessarily have been raised in, because heterosexuality doesn't allow for a lot of openness around like gender or gender expression or sexuality. Mm. You know, and we don't give that to our kids, and we come into parenthood as intentional parents.
Right.
I wasn't planned. I'm sure a lot of us weren't.
Yeah. No.
Parents are just having sex and we popped up. That doesn't happen in our community.
With a cigarette in their mouth.
This is
kind of martini.
It comes back to this every episode.
Yeah.
We are intentional
parents. We're intentional parents.
None of these families are by accident. Not a single one.
And I think that makes us better prepared. And it gives us, like, you know, I have the patience for my baby. And, you know, I'm ready for, like, the change in my life that happens because we have a kid. Like, I'm, you know, I've had to, like, you know, just dial things back a little bit and dial certain things up a little bit. But I knew that's just what I was getting into because I wanted her. And we worked really hard for
to have her.
We worked hard. Yeah. Paid money. And
money.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
worked hard.
Yeah,
man.
We worked hard.
It was not easy.
So I did this thing in Brooklyn that morning. And there were so many people lined up because they were coming to the school to vote. Everybody had on the Hillary Clinton, you know, buttons and whatnot.
Sure.
Had their kids and shit. Everybody felt all fucking inspired and shit.
Yeah.
And it was
voting
raucous.
For our woman president.
Yeah, it was amazing. Like, people, there was just so much
hope,
energy.
Hope
so much
hope.
You
air.
Could feel it in the air in the school. Like, everybody was just so excited,
I've never
right?
been so hopeful.
It was an amazing morning. It was an amazing morning. So I get to the airport and, you know, the TVs are going.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, everything's popping up red. And I'm like, okay, it's okay. So then, you know, I get on a plane, get to Miami. You know, get off in Miami and things are just going to the crapper, right? Things are getting really shitty.
Yeah.
So by the time I get on the boat, fucking Trump is fucking president.
Oh my God.
So my wife called me the next day and she was like, yo, your country has lost its collective mind. We are leaving.
Good for her. Yo, I want to move to Canada.
We left the next month. We moved to Toronto December of 2016. Got a condo there in 2016. I was back and forth in New York a lot in 2017. I was really here, but making our way there. But then, you know, wifey got pregnant. And then that was it. And that was it. Yeah. And then baby was born in January. Like, and I've really been in Toronto ever since.
This is like what I say all, like I probably say it once a month. We got to go to Canada.
I've never met anyone that actually
picked up
and moved to Canada.
Yeah, we picked
up
and we left. We're really happy. So yeah, so my wife and I travel the country telling our stories of family and talking about intersectional approaches to human rights leadership and executive leadership. Because what we understand is that when people, we have organizations and companies that are inclusive, they are more innovative because you're having so many different creative viewpoints, right? Mm-hmm. So I get to do that. And then I do like the college circuit and just sharing my story. I do a talk on creating organic masculinity. I do a talk on allyship across margins. I do talks on sexuality and sex and consent. Like I'm going to a school in University of Alberta next month and I'm doing a long training with all of these like athletes and all these boys to talk to them about sex and consent and what it means to not be a fucking tool your whole life.
Right? You. Like just don't be an asshole.
Don't be an asshole. Just be nice.
Yeah.
Cost you nothing.
Yes.
Because I think there's a generational divide right now between like the younger generation and the older. Like, I feel like there's not a space for just like talking. It's like there's this like feeling of like everyone, and this isn't just like trans, this is also like gay, this is also color. Like there's like this, you should come educated. And I do think that's true. Like we should all work to be educated. But sometimes like I don't know what it's like to live in Russia. So, like, I think that we have to also find in the middle where we talk about intention and where we talk about, like, you can see when someone's intention is good.
Yeah.
And it's like, so tell us and then go, oh, fuck, and we can learn.
Yeah, yeah. But that's the thing. There's a difference between intention and impact. And the work takes place between those two places. Right.
Tell us, tell me more about that.
Yes.
Like, you know, there's an old saying that says, the road to hell is paved in good intention.
Yes.
Right.
So you may have the best intention in the world, but the way you go about it, you don't have that kind of impact.
You still impact someone badly.
Yeah,
negatively.
You can see that. You can see that sometimes in your personal relationships with your partner. Like you have the intention to do the right thing. You're having a really heated discussion and you say something that you think is going to make them feel better, but they're like, you know what? We just minimized me and you dismissed, you were being dismissive. It backfires. So, you didn't have the correct impact. So what we have to do is really be mindful of those things. Maybe take a step back, being able to apologize, being able to ask questions that doesn't invalidate other people's truths, but kind of complicates our own truths. That's I think is really key when it comes to making that strong line between your intention and your impact. Being able to ask people questions, being genuinely curious about people's experiences, right? And listening with the intent to be complicated, to have your own self complicated, instead of listening with the intent to respond.
Yes.
Yeah, that's for me, that's what that trajectory looks like, from intent to impact. And then once you can do those things, then you ask people, what is it can I do? How can I leverage like the privileges that I have in order to be in solidarity with you? What can I do to make things better? You know, and the thing is that a lot of times people don't get asked like what they need, you know, oftentimes, you know, it's a whole thing of like treating people that the way we want to be treated. But when we do that, that means that we are the standard bearer for other people's needs.
Yeah.
So ask people what they want, how they want to be
treated. There's that thing. They say you can apologize and you should get really good at apologizing. But if you don't ask the next step,
what can
I do to make this better or what can I do to help you?
Yeah.
Then you didn't do your job.
Happen. You didn't do anything.
And I think this is good for us to hear.
It's very good. I think the hard part for me is like, if I'm a person who's not educated, like I said, I don't know Russia.
Yeah.
It's the question's just not going to come out so eloquent. And I think sometimes there's like this, it's going to come out possibly impacting another person, but maybe they didn't mean to, but they don't have the right words or they wouldn't even know, like they're struggling themselves to just even be comfortable. Like what's your everyman way of telling people how to get better about this?
Okay. So I think sometimes it's okay to say, I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
You know, to say right, like, I really I really don't know what to say right now, but tell me how I can help. Tell me if there's anything you need. That's a good place to start. And also, not for nothing, Google is your friend.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Actually, I learned that from you, Robin. Google is my friend.
I do.
If you don't know something, figure it out. You know, so go on, shameless plug. So I'm hosting a conversation with my good friend Jody Patterson, and Jody is the author of a book called The Bold World, right? And Jody is mother of a transgender boy. Her son came out as trans when he was like 3, right?
Oh, 3.
He was 3, and I think Penelope is like 10 now. And so in the book, she talks about how she didn't know. She's like, I had never even heard of trans before. I don't know any trans people. You know, she's like, you know, I come from a lineage of really strong women. I was so prepared for my daughter to be this beautiful girl. And my daughter is just, is now my son. Right. And so what she did was like, she was like, you know, it takes 10,000 hours to master anything. Right. And I'm going to master this, you know, because she had the intention of being the best mother that she could be to guide her 3-year-old son and to protect him on this journey of his transition. And she wanted that intention to have the right impact. So she learned. That's the thing. You have to care enough to educate yourself, because the thing is, when you don't know, you can't expect other people in other groups to do that emotional labor to help you learn.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't like when she was looking at her son at 3 years old obviously couldn't teach her, you know, how to respond to him, you know, but it wasn't necessarily, you know, the obligation of other trans people to teach her that either.
Yeah.
You know, you got to do that work for yourself. So people really want to want their intention to meet their impact, and they don't know where to start, and they're like, I don't know what's going on, you know, learn something.
Or think of that person as, have the compassion for that person as you would your 3-year-old child.
Yeah.
That's a nice way to think of it.
That's a takeaway for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Compassion. And have that empathy. You know, like I think that empathy is really important when we talk about execution. I think empathy is really important when we talk about like empathy and like empathy is really important when we talk about like moving forward.
Yeah.
You know, so like grounding yourself in compassion and empathy and working from that place.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and which I have found. Let me tell you another story. So I did this panel right at Ryerson University in Toronto. And it was about masculinity. I was the only trans guy on the panel, and this straight cis guy was like, you know, what I have always been taught is that empathy is antithetical to efficiency as a leader.
Interesting. Like, right. I don't have time to, like, take care of your feelings.
Right, like, right. I feel like that's a very, like, masculine, man thing to kind of think about.
Don't
like,
be
that's
emotional, just do
that's such bullshit. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's, you know, you have to be really grounded in empathy in order to be able to lead people and to have an impact and for growth.
Teek, you said something that it's still stuck in my brain. You said organic masculinity.
Oh, yeah.
What is this? What is this concept?
Okay, so for me as a transgender man, I know I started my transition at 25. I started living fully as a man at 25. Before that, I came out as a lesbian at 14. Right?
Oh, wow.
So like I'm very, very queer. Like all I know, like since my sexuality developed, you know, when I started, you know, it's always been in queer community. Mm-hmm. And so I'm in queer community, and then now I'm a man, and I was looking for blueprints on what it meant to be a man in the world. It was different being like a masculine woman in mostly women's spaces,
right?
You know, but then.
Because there was a butch femme blueprint.
Yeah, it was a butch femme blueprint, right? And I loved it. And I love my queer community. I love my lesbian community. But then as a man, so now I got a beard and I look different. Now I can't get into the lesbian spaces anymore. And which I shouldn't.
Did that make you sad though at all?
Absolutely.
Did you feel like a loss?
Yeah, it was definitely, there's definitely a moment of grief there because I lost that community that I had. Like that sisterhood that I had. Like these people that basically raised me up. I was going to the gay clubs at 16 years old.
Right.
So here I'm a man in the world and I've kind of lost my community, which has always been kind of like my support. In my kind of crutch, you know?
Yeah, that's hard.
And I was like, I don't want to hang out with these straights because I think straights are awful. Yeah, so no offense to straight people. So here I am, you know, and people look at me and they read me as straight, but it's like I didn't see any examples of heterosexual masculinity that felt good to me. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It all felt limited or like there's a lot of posturing. It really felt fake. Mm-hmm. A lot of it felt really, really fucking fake. It felt like heterosexual men were always defining their masculinity in relationship to something else. Like you define your masculinity by how much you can control, how much that you possess, you know, who you are better than. It's always this one-upness.
Who you're dating.
Yeah, like I'm a man because, you know, I drive this Corvette, or I'm a man because I'm with this hot chick or I have all this money, or I'm a better athlete than you, I'm bigger than you, I'm tougher than you. But when you get rid of all of that, when you take away everybody else and stop putting yourself against other people, what is left of your masculinity?
I really don't know.
Exactly. You know what's interesting? What is calling out to me right now is you don't relate to that yet.
Not even a little bit.
You felt like you were a man on the inside, but you don't relate to any of that.
Right. And that's where the organic masculinity comes from. And I always say, for me, it was about curating masculinity that was tethered to my spirit and not something that had to depend on a third party. Like, my masculinity isn't something that could be undone as something by something as innocuous as, like, the color pink, right? Or, like, Beyonce. Exactly. Or having too much joy. Or being sad. Or being fearful.
Yeah, none of these things
do anything for me as a man. I'm still a man. The idea of passing in that language has a legacy in the United States. Mm. And it's a racial legacy. It comes from, like, light-skinned black people and light-eyed black folks who would pass for white because either, you know, they pass for white, particularly, like, you know, during Reconstruction and things like that, because it, you know, gave them better access to healthcare, to schools, to neighborhoods, to safety, to autonomy, just to be able to live as your autonomous self and really just be able to pursue your dreams and your goals.
Money to jobs to
fucking stopped by, like, systemic racism or, like, overtly, like, violent racism. So that's where passing comes from. Is it was a deliberate and intentional thing. And you also have black people who just internalized white supremacy and hated being black fuck it, I ain't black, I'm white. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So, and these are things that are really intentional, right? That somebody did. I am not intentionally trying to pass as a cisgender person.
Right.
I'm very trans. I'm very queer. I'm in community. So for me, it's more like I'm assumed. People assuming, I'm not doing anything to make people think that I'm a cisgender person. People are assuming that I'm a cisgender person.
You're just being who you be.
This is just what my transition looked like. But I, in no way, under any circumstances, want to be straight or want to be a cisgender person. Like, that's not who I am.
Or need that as a badge.
That's not my thing. So that's how I feel about passing. So I just switched the language around. But I mean, it helps. Like, you know, when me and my wife are out in public, and they see us, you know, particularly us as a black family. You know, they see us as a black heterosexual family. And they go, oh, like, you're so young. People think I'm so young. And she's so young. And they're like, oh, my God, we love you. Look at you. Yeah.
And you're all pretty.
You're all like, beautiful. And it's like, if you knew how fucking queer we were, honey, you'd be throwing a Bible at us.
Jamie, you look tired.
I am so tired. This winter season has really, really, really taken me down. I'm losing my voice. Mm-hmm. I keep getting colds. I'm a mess.
You need to subscribe to Care of, Jamie.
What is that again?
Jamie! It's that monthly subscription vitamin service, and they deliver personalized vitamin and supplement packets to your door.
Right.
Nobody needs this more than you.
I know. You know, I went through a phase of taking vitamins, but I fell off the wagon. Because, you know, once the bottle runs out, you forget.
Or you know, and you just can't even get there.
Right. Totally. We're moms.
I'm telling you. That's why Care of is so brilliant.
Yeah.
It's your personalized subscription box. It's like to your door every month. And you are never going to run out.
Yeah.
And you know I love this.
I know you love it. It's to your door. So I totally get it. And it actually sounds
really...
I think
to your door is my middle name.
I mean, it actually sounds really amazing because I can't be bothered to go to the store. It's so hard to even just get a shower in with two kids under five at home. Like, I'm exhausted.
I know. That's why we're going to let Care of do the work.
And then, like,
Jamie,
to do the research myself, too. Are you kidding? I don't know what vitamins to buy.
Yeah. And you know, the reality is that something like 90% of the people, they fall short of their FDA guidelines. Vitamins, nutrients.
Oh,
I think you're missing probably 9 or 10.
I bet you I am. And I believe that. And that's why my nails are always so brittle. There must be some nutrient lacking there no idea what it is.
It's an E, it's a G.
Okay, I'm gonna need you to take a step.
I don't need to figure it out. I don't need to figure it out because Care of is gonna figure it out when you take their online quiz.
Yeah.
There's health questions about your diet and your lifestyle choices.
Yeah.
Not about your gay lifestyle choices, but just your regular lifestyle choices. And then they're gonna send you monthly packets of vitamins that are customized for you.
I love that.
As I said, directly to your door.
I mean, it sounds really easy and that's what I need. But I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Do they offer vegetarian, vegan options? Because, you know, I care about this kind of thing.
Stop it. Of course they do.
Of course they do.
Can you please just get it already? Because you sound horrible and I need you for this podcast.
I will. I'm going to do it. And for our listeners out there, Care Of is offering 50% off your first month.
That's so much.
That is so much. So you should all do this too. Let's all have good nails together.
Okay. How do they do that?
Well, for 50% off your first month of personalized Care Of vitamins, go to takecareof.com and enter OCT50.
So, I mean, this needs to be repeated. 50% off your first month of personalized Care Of vitamins. Go to takecareof.com and enter OCT50.
50.
And you know that because it means 50% off.
50%.
I was such a tomboy in sixth grade, like, because I always wanted to, like, I wanted to, like, swim in the pool. We had a pool. I wanted to swim without my top on. I was, like, heartbroken when I had to wear a bra, and I wanted to wear just the trunks because I only hung out with the boys. So, like, right now with my daughter, it's sometimes, like, she's talking to me about these stories about her dolls, and I'm just, like, and I have to say to her, I'm, like, hey, honey, I'm, like, listen, I didn't have this experience. I'm, like, but that's, it's okay. Like, I'll talk to you about it. But, like, her experience with her little fourth grade girlfriends is just, like,
her little girlfriend.
Yeah, it's, like, foreign. It's, like, I'm, like, I was playing kickball while you were doing this.
Yeah.
Like, you all were, like, making up your songs and your chants, but I was, like, doing shit over here with the boys.
Yeah,
until the boys wouldn't have me anymore. Yeah, until that age where they wanted the girls, right? And I remember saying to my mom, like, I think I said something like, I want to be a boy. Like, I had a teacher who pulled me aside and said, she offered me, and she's a delightful woman who comments on everything I do on Facebook to this day.
Oh, wow.
I mean, she's everything. She likes every photo of my children. But she offered me $1 for every day I would wear a dress. And I turned her down. Like, can you imagine? Like, that's a shit
good for
ton
you.
Of money. But because it wasn't me.
Yeah.
And, but she was, I understand what she was trying to do for me. She was like, she pulled me aside and she said, it's happening. Like, they're separating. Like, these boys that you're friends, it's not going to keep working.
Yeah.
Like, you're going into middle school next year. Like, this isn't going to.
Yeah.
And she was, I think it was her way of trying to help me.
Yeah.
But it didn't help me because it wasn't me.
Mm-hmm. I just love hanging out with boys. But yeah, that's the thing.
It just felt, that felt right to me at that time.
And me and you have a similar experience because I was definitely like a tomboy growing up. I remember my first experience around gender when I was like 7. And my mother had bought me this strawberry shortcake bicycle. And she was so proud of this bike. I had just learned how to like ride without my training wheels. And she bought me this bike and
thought
had the pink tassels
it.
and the pink banana seat. And I wasn't fucking riding that bike anywhere. Okay. I didn't know I was trans. I was like, I'm not riding this. I'm not riding this. And, you know, and I didn't know I was trans at the time. And I'm just saying this to say, like, there's really a spectrum of what gender it looks like.
Yeah.
Because you are identified as a woman, but you're not necessarily into all of the femmy shit that people say that women are supposed to be into. Now, at that time, I didn't know that I was trans, but I knew I wasn't into those feminine things either. But for me, I really associated being a boy with freedom, not necessarily my gender.
Yeah.
Because the boys could go to the riding bikes to the park.
Yes.
I had to stay on the block. You know what I'm saying? They could be out after streetlights. I could. There was so much freedom for them to be in their
But it was also just freedom. Like, I didn't want to shower like until Sunday. And I was like, fuck this shit. I'm playing kickball.
I want to play football. I want to be on the Little League football team so badly. And I couldn't.
I'll share
so
pictures of me in the football. And the football.
Please.
With my little bowl cut.
Please.
You'll see some pictures.
Yeah, I love that. But that's the thing. Like, boys are given more freedom. Yeah. You know, it's like girls have to learn how to be like ladies.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Oh my God, I was not interested in that at all.
Me neither. I hated stockings and dread. I had to go to church and itchy ass stockings.
Wow. Well, I mean, this has been an incredible chat. I mean, like, you just really... I feel like
I need you here. Like, I need you in my ear.
Yeah.
Hey, like an IFB. Jamie, you're strong enough.
I've seen little mantras.
You got this.
Every week.
Yeah.
Little audio files.
I would take them. I would take them. Guru Teak right here. Guru Teak.
That's my thing. So I'm writing a book. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about the book.
So the book is called Man of My Design, A Self-Determined Life. It's a memoir. It should be out fall of next year. We're still, me and my agent are still working on it. We're still doing it. We're still massaging it and putting some wheels on it, but it's happening.
Tell folks about your podcast too, because like you're a fellow podcaster.
I am a fellow podcaster.
Fellow podcaster.
Hey. So I have a podcast called Mask Undone and Mask M-A-S-K. And it's this idea of taking off the mask of masculinity. Because, you know, masculinity is so performative. It's just so performative. It's not a lot of it is just so inauthentic. So it's me and another trans guy.
I love hearing that.
It really is.
I'm gonna say it again. We need to get you to Oprah. We can't do that, but we'll do what
we can.
Work.
Yeah, you can.
We're gonna start a campaign.
You are right in line with Oprah. You need to. You're so in line with her. Super Soul Conversations and Masterclass. Yeah. Like you could be on both of those.
Let's put that out there.
Yeah, we're putting it out. I'm all about the law of attraction.
Letting us stalk you and for coming back.
Thank you for stalking me and make sure that I got here. I'm so happy I came.
This has been really wonderful.
This has been fun. It's been great.
Aww. Thanks, Teak.
I love him.
I really love Teak. Teak is my new guru.
Yeah. And you know, go ahead.
I feel like he has to have like his own show, like Oprah.
He does have his own show. He has a podcast.
No, I know, but like Oprah.
Oh, you mean like an Oprah
type
show?
Like the Oprah show. I feel like he's going to change the world someday.
I mean, I think he might already be changing the world.
Well, yes. Yes, but on a bigger scale.
Yeah. I mean, there's
like, you can't see my arms, but they're spread out.
Super wide. I feel like there's something in between like having a podcast and being Oprah. Like maybe somewhere in the middle of that.
I think he's on the up and up, though. I think like
we're like on the level of Oprah.
Not close at all, Robin.
Not even. Well, you can check out his podcast. It's called Mask Undone.
M A S C.
Yes, correct.
Not K.
Correct.
And he's amazing.
For a minute, by the way, when you said K, I was like, "Is that how that's spelled?" I was like, "Right, yes, yes, K.
Oh,
not
no.
the strongest speller. We're writing a book." So, guys. Check us out on all our social media. Mm-hmm. Get us on Instagram at @ovaries_talk. Thank you. Mm-hmm. You could see I was not going to get that.
No, I'm shocked.
Ovaries Talk on Twitter.
And If These Ovaries Could Talk on Facebook or, you know, old school email.
Email. Email. Oh. Jamie's so tired, you guys. She's going to go home and take a nap after this. Ovariestalk@gmail.com. And remember, please email us your stories because we want to highlight, you know, not just like the likes of these, you know, these people with the big followers like the Teeks and the Judy Gold coming up next week. Judy Gold.
Oh, yeah. Get excited.
Not just those people, but, you know, everybody's stories because all of our stories are important. So email us.
Mm-hmm. Please do. We want to hear from you.
And
thank you to our sponsors.
Yes. Care of. Mm-hmm. And don't forget, use our promo codes.
Yes, please do. Helps them, helps us.
Okay, I think it's time, Jamie, for you to go to bed.
I'm not going to get to go to bed. What do you think I am? I'm not a mom.
What is that even, not a mom?
My brain isn't working. And eggs. I'm writing a book.
Eggs.
Ovaries.
Out.
Out.
Go to bed. If these ovaries could talk, they would say,
eggs, ovaries, out. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.